But I want to be out for a while first, you know, and remember what that is like.
Preaching to the choir, baby. Preaching to the choir. I like a little time off, but also I don't want to go away for so long that I forget how to do school.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. You know, 2 or 3 years from now, I'm going to be just bored out of my mind. That's my fear.
Exactly. So might as well get all this shit over with while we can.
Right you are, my friend. Okay, we have a few things of interest, of note, to discuss on the pod this week. I guess a couple things that are new, but we're gonna try not to rehash some things we've talked about. We're going to look upon it with fresh eyes, especially as it pertains to one Joao Felix, Rob.
Yeah, new perspectives.
Yeah, fresh perspectives here. So let's update our listeners on the latest, what's going on there. Benfica announced Wednesday evening that they had received an offer from Atletico for Joao Felix, 126 million euros. However,
that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, yeah. It's not a lot of money. However, this figure technically doesn't trigger his release clause because Atletico want to pay the 126 million in installments. So that's why the extra 6 million is tacked on there at the end. So negotiations, the party line, the official position is that negotiations are ongoing, but considering that Benfica are floated on the Portuguese stock market and considering all the reporting up to this point, it looks like this is just a formality before the move becomes official this week or next week.
Yes, I think that's right. I mean, it at the same time, it's also like, who are Atleti really bidding against at this point?
Themselves.
Themselves, which is never a good thing. But, you know, I get it. I mean, once, you know, if you're in for 120, you might as well be in for 126.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, what is it? What difference does it make? It's only a squad playing whatever position player from La Liga 2. for 6 million euros? I mean, really?
Yeah, I mean, well, you've already paid this much money. I mean, I wonder if that figure is how they've broken up the installments, because there hasn't been anything on that. Whether they're planning to pay this over 2 windows or 6 windows, who knows where that extra 6 million figure comes from. That's what is officially going on, is that Benfica confirmed that an offer exists and that basically that this is on the way. The player has already agreed a contract, 5 years. Still quite a bit to be determined here, but I think this was really the last big hurdle before this gets done.
Yeah, and I mean, granted, I mean, I realize that in our world of kind of not trusting anything, that Joao Felix's agent is not technically Jorge Mendes.
That's right.
But, you know, all Portuguese players, you feel like he has fingers in those pies.
Don Mendes.
Right. So, you know, it is what it is, I suppose. I mean, he's good. It's good. He's one of the best prospects in Europe. He's only 19 years old, but it's a hell of a lot of money.
And, the weird thing about his wages is that Goal have reported that he's making 3.5 million euros a year. I think Az said he's going to make 6 million euros a year. So,
That's a pretty wide range.
That's a pretty wide range. He's going to make some amount of money over the length of this contract. That much I can tell you.
Yes, we are sure about that.
Yes, but if it's 3.5 million euros a year, I mean, that's obviously better from the club standpoint, because obviously we know what Antoine Griezmann was making last year. It was a lot more than 3.5 million euros.
It was
23 million euros, which was unsustainable, and as we've discussed, kind of tanked the team and tanked the wage structure last year.
Right, exactly. I mean, and if you think about it, I mean, granted, 126 million euros is a ton of money, but on a per-week basis, that's, what, 67, round about 70 million euros on the low end? That's not a lot of money for a star player in today's environment, so it's not awful.
It seems kind of too good to be true, right? Because if it's true that the wages are this low, and then there was a report last week saying Atletico are going to stick a 350 million euro release clause into this contract, it seems too good to be true, does it not?
It does, and I mean, on the upward end of it, it's 115 million, or 115,000, rather, per week, so that's kind of more reasonable, I think, if you're going to be putting a big-ass release clause in there like that, but we'll see. We'll see. I mean, we'll probably never know the exact figure, but we'll probably get a rough estimate once he actually signs.
We've had the debate about whether this is a good thing for Atleti. We've had the debate about, you know, is it worth the investment? Is it not? How good is this kid? What I kind of want to talk about now, Rob, is if Diego Simeone is going to change. And from the viewpoint of the coach who has just been given, or is about to be given, this uber-talented prospect, one of the brightest young talents in Europe, is he going to change? Is he going to change the system for him? Is he going to give him more responsibility than he arguably gave Griezmann? What do you think?
So here's my optimistic viewpoint on this, which is that João Félix is not, I mean, in his current form, a pure striker, a pure number nine, shall we say. But because Diego Simeone has Alvaro Morata, in theory, has Alvaro Morata for the coming season, which is a very much pure number nine that he likes, target man, good at heading, yada, yada, yada. Since he has that, it makes me somewhat more optimistic that he can fit João Félix in there with him as the second striker, which seems to be his better position, perhaps preferred position. So as a second striker working off Alvaro Morata, I feel like João Félix could actually prosper a little bit. So that's what makes me feel optimistic. Now, on the other end of it, we don't really have any proof that Diego Simeone can develop young attackers in a meaningful way yet. We've seen Angel Correa stutter in a major way. Obviously, Antoine Griezmann was a bit older, whatever. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I feel a little bit more optimistic just thinking about him with Morata than I would if it was just João Félix, if that makes sense.
Interesting. I hadn't really... obviously, I had considered Morata being in this team next year, but from the standpoint of just kind of slotting him in, that I think that's probably what's going to happen. Like, we've talked about this a lot before. Diego Simeone is not a leopard that's going to change his spots.
Correct.
You know, this has been working for 8 years now. It's averaged a trophy a season to this point. From Cholo's perspective, why should he change? I think it's interesting because we've only seen João Félix play for one full season. That said, he has proven himself in an okay league. He prospered and helped lead his team to the league title. Did really well in the Europa League. He's been capped for the national team already. I think that's the more important debate that I think more people should be having, whether or not how good this
kid is. The more relevant debate.
Sure, relevant, yeah. That's the more relevant debate, is not how good this kid really is, but how he fits, and if Simeone is going to change more than João Félix is going to change.
Right. I totally agree.
So I don't really know how much he's going to change. Ideally, I would love to see a 4-2-3-1 where you have your back four, you have Marcos Llorente and Tomas as your double pivot. You have João Félix or Koke playing right behind Morata. The one who's not behind Morata is going on the wing. Tomas Lemar is on the other wing. And, of course, you have Morata or Diego Costa.
Yeah, and, I mean, from my perspective, I sort of see it as more likely that it's probably, I mean, realistically, it'll be probably a 4-4-2. So if we imagine João Félix in kind of the Antoine Griezmann sort of role with the more traditional striker, whether that be Morata, whether that be Diego Costa, it's not a bad combination, really. I mean, I think it's more likely that he could do well because Atleti certainly have the two more traditional strikers locked in. So he's not going to be asked to change in that way. So I hope that he'll be given a little bit more leeway to kind of do his thing, because he's not going to be asked to be doing all the headery kind of stuff that Morata and Costa holding up the ball and whatnot that Diego Simeone wants them to do.
Yeah, I think the system is by default going to be built and constructed around him. I mean, that's kind of what happens when you pay this much money. And yeah, like you said, I don't know. The hope is, at least, that he gets some more leniency in that regard. Another reason why this is pertinent is that Simeone has given a couple interviews in the past couple weeks saying, well, if Joao Felix signs, then we're going to have to change, then we're going to have to tinker. And that has kind of, you know, naturally perked my ears up, because I wonder, just knowing Simeone and knowing his style and his management style, I wonder how much he can really change. We've seen before, he's tried the 4-3-3, he's tried playing Koke centrally, he's done a few of these short-term type of things, but whenever the going gets rough, he goes right back to the 4-4-2, goes right back to the quattro pivote, and I wonder if there's going to be something a little more permanent. And that's why this debate is so relevant.
I think that's right. But at the same time, I think João Félix's other positions is either a straight-up number 9, which I don't think he's ready for at this point in his career, or left wing is like an inside forward kind of deal, which if you're doing that, then that's basically telling Thomas Lemar to piss off, which I don't think is going to happen considering how much they paid for him. Which makes me kind of think that second striker slash number 10 role is where it's going to end up. I mean, he may move around a little bit, but that seems the most likely to me.
That's kind of where, at least to start, that's where I... Actually, to start, I could see him being a winger. I mean, knowing Cholo, I could see him... I mean, that's what happened when Griezmann first came aboard. Griezmann played sparingly his first month or two. Cholo played him as a winger. And then in December, he was like, in December 2014, he was like, oh, here's an idea. Why don't we make Griezmann a second striker? And then, you know, the rest. So it wouldn't shock me if that happened to Joao Felix as well. But I guess the hope is that he eventually makes the Griezmann role his own and expands upon what Grizzy did. Remember, this kid has, like, Ballon d'Or potential.
Well, and he, in the Portuguese league, which of course we know is a minefield in and of itself, he was more than a 1-2 man in terms of goals to appearances ratio. So that's a pretty good sign for a 19-year-old. But at the same time, you know, we have to temper expectations that there will be an adjustment period for the kid. Almost certainly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you and McTeer was on the show last week, and we talked about that, is that I think based on the fee and based on the hype, there's going to be some expectation that he hits the ground running, and that's probably not going to happen.
Right.
And we got to remember that this coming season, Atletico are most likely not going to be in the running for major silverware. This is going to be a transitional season. This is where you bring in a bunch of new pieces and see how they fit as part of the puzzle.
My hope is actually that regardless of João Félix or Thomas Lemar or whoever else comes in, is that Alvaro Morata starts off the season like a house on fire, and Diego Costa, because those are the two players that could really put Atleti on their back, realistically, because they're both veteran players that have done it in other leagues and are certainly more reliable than the youngsters. So if Atleti are going to make a run at major silverware, it's going to be one of those two guys that puts the team on their back.
Yeah, very possible. And I do think Morata does start from match day one. And I think I expect Morata to have a really, really good season next year. I expect him to approach 20 goals in the league. I think he is going to be really good.
I mean, I think we saw last year that he fits this Diego Simeone system really, really well in a way that I didn't see coming. I mean, I thought he'd do well, but I think he really fits it even better than I thought he would.
Now, there is one other big rumor that has come about, but before we get into that second debate, a couple other transfer notes. Yes, Atleti, you're still searching for fullbacks. There's nothing really close. Renan Lodi, who we talked about on one of the bonus pods, is still the most likely name to come in at left back, but there's apparently some sort of taxation issue in Brazil, and basically the transfer is on hold. So Renan Lodi is still the most likely name to come in. The other name that has been linked with Atleti for right back is Napoli's El Said Husai. Talked a little bit about him before. I don't watch enough Serie A to say definitively, hey, this guy's really good, or hey, this guy's not so good. But he is the alternative to Nelson Semedo, who is likely to stay at Barcelona. Husay has been at Napoli for the last 4 years, I think. He's an Albania international, relatively young too. I think he's still about 25 or 26, if that. But that's the most prominent name being linked to the right back slot.
I suppose so, yeah. I mean, was it him or was it Goulam that tore his ACL last season?
It was Goulam.
Okay, it was Goulam. All right, Goulam. So that's fine. I mean, of course, we could talk about your favorite player in all of European football that's been linked at the right back spot. Oh,
the Hector Bellerin agenda. I am not a Hector Bellerin fan.
But he's such a good dude. He's such a good person.
He's got a good fashion sense. I'll give him that.
Yes. Yes, and he's a smart fella. But
he runs really fast.
Well, he used to.
Now he's torn up his knee. He's not going to run fast no more.
Yeah, no, he don't run fast no more. And he's also probably out for the first 2 months of the season anyway, which is basically why wouldn't Atleti just bring back Frisalco at that point?
Seriously.
So, yeah, no, I don't think that's happening, but I think it's an interesting thing. I mean, I can't imagine a worse fit for a Diego Simeone system than Hector Bellerin, to be totally honest with you. Like, that would just be a dude that was groomed under Arsene Wenger to then go to Diego Simeone. That don't really seem like it would work.
Not really. Nah.
Nah. Yeah, to put it kindly.
I'm not really sure who conjured that rumor up. Bellerin for like $50 million and Vitolo. I'm not really sure who in the United Kingdom conjured that one up, but it's not happening.
Well, it was a thing, because from the most reliable Arsenal source, it certainly was a thing, but basically both Bellerin and Arsenal said no, from the more reliable sources that have come out. So,
right,
you know,
right.
That was probably best for all parties.
Yeah, and for my sanity.
Yes, and most importantly for Jeremy's sanity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I can't imagine the podcast, the Hector Bellerin signing podcast. That'd be almost second to the Vitolo press conference. It would be brutal.
It would be very close to the Vitolo podcast, where you could not see me and I could not see you, but you knew the steam was coming out of my ears.
I know. As soon as that rumor became a thing, I was like, oh boy, here we go.
And now look where we are with Vitolo. Yeah.
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
Not even Unai Emery wants him, and that's saying something.
Yeah, Unai loved him.
Yeah, and Unai don't know what he's talking about, so it's shocking.
You hate to see it.
You hate to see it happen.
You hate to see it.
Welcome to Atleti B, Vitolo. What a shame.
Yeah, other than that, yeah, let's transition now since we mentioned Vitolo. He's been part of another kind of prominent rumor, this one breaking over the last 24, 36 hours. It, as I intimated earlier, it had come about earlier in the summer, but was sort of dismissed, and then it came back again and was kind of looked at, oh, that's interesting, then dismissed again. It's one James Rodriguez, Rob. And it is one James Rodriguez that, according to Spanish radio, wants to keep living in Madrid, and he's not opposed to playing for Atletico.
Going from a player that you really don't like to a player I really don't like.
That's why I want to talk to you about him. The report from SCR came out last night, and it says Atleti really want James, and James is like, yeah, I can do this. But Atleti know that they have to get rid of both Vitolo and Angel Correa to make it happen. And they have to have James say, I don't want to work with Carlo Ancelotti anymore, even though he's worked with him at two other teams. Napoli, Carlo's current team, are well ahead in the negotiations. They are still the most likely team to get James and bring him in on a permanent deal, which is the only deal Real Madrid want. But Atleti are apparently very, very interested in signing James, and they don't view it as impossible.
Well, much like the Hector Bellerin signing, I can't think of another kind of player that wouldn't fit Atleti more than James Rodriguez. I mean, a very kind of luxury player who plays number 10 in a system that Atleti do not really employ. I just can't really see it happening feasibly. I mean, it'd be expensive and not especially effective, if that makes sense, because James is, I mean, he's good, but for a team like Atleti, who need consistent performances, he's not that guy.
As someone who embraces chaos theory, I say go for it. Just, why the hell not? Bring him in! Sacrifice your depth! Bring him in! On his day, he's a world-class midfielder. But, yeah, I share your concerns in that, where is James going to play? I talked about this with you in last week and kind of brought up a similar point. You buy James, you drop a cool 40, 50 million on James. Okay, sure. Where are you going to play him? James is best in a 4-2-3-1 system playing, or a diamond system like the one Zidane played. He's best playing behind a striker or two strikers and just having that free advanced playmaking number 10 role. Atletico don't have that. Simeone doesn't have that. He had Antoine,
especially not with João Félix.
Right. He had Antoine Griezmann play effectively the 7, the 9, and the 10. And who knows if that's going to happen with João Félix. Who knows if Cholo will tweak the system so that there are fewer responsibilities or maybe more responsibilities. We don't really know yet. We need to see him in action wearing red and white. But for James, I think there's a little more... There are fewer unknowns and more knowns with James in that we have a track record with James. We know how he plays, where he likes to play, and Atletico don't seem like that kind of fit. Like, not really at all.
Right. I mean, and he's had two disappointing seasons with Bayern Munich and never really fit in at Real Madrid other than his first season where he scored a bunch of goals. But to put that to one side, his last four seasons haven't been that good. And I mean, I still feel like personally he's living off the glory of the 2014 World Cup, which he did absolutely kick the shit out of everyone. But
right,
regardless, that was 5 years ago.
I mean, Madrid bought him off the strength of that World Cup, and
correct.
To be fair, he was really good his first season, pretty good his second season. When he played in 2016-17, he was very good. But yeah, he's gone to Bayern, and things haven't. They've been very up and down for him. He had less playing. I'll put it like this: he had less playing time than he would have liked last season, as Bayern just barely won the Bundesliga and got knocked out in the last 16 by Liverpool. Yeah, with James.
Well, and I think Atleti can't afford a luxury player like James. I mean, it's like a middle market baseball team going in for an all-star closer. Like it just doesn't make sense. There's no reason to have this luxury player that's good in certain moments when you're not necessarily sure that you're going to be in those big moments. I don't think it makes sense considering the amount of money the transfer cost in the first place. And second, he went to Monaco and Monaco had money. So he's been on basically a humongous wage since 2013. And Atleti paying that much money is just getting back into the Griezmann cycle of things.
Did you just work in some New York Mets slander?
By saying I might have.
A middle market team going for a closer?
I might have thrown that in there. I'm a little bit mad at them.
Shout out at Edwin Diaz.
Yes, exactly.
Well done.
Big shout out.
Well done. That was very subtle. I like how you did that.
Well, you know, or the Atlanta Braves training Craig Kimbrell. I mean, you, when you're a sort of mid to high level team, do you need an ultra good closer? No. Like with James Rodriguez, do Atleti need an ultra-good number 10? Not really. Especially with the signing of João Félix, who is already a luxury signing.
Yeah, he does serve the role as the Griezmann replacement, but he also could be so much more. That's why you're paying so much for him, is for what he could be. James, we kind of know what James is. On his day, a really, really good player, and when he's not on his day, you can't play him. He's unplayable.
Let Manchester United pay that wage.
Yeah,
that's not an Atleti kind of signing.
Atleti can probably afford most of his wages now, considering Griezmann's off the bill. They can probably make up a bunch of his wages that Madrid have paid him. But in terms of the actual fit, Cholo would have to completely overhaul the system. So yeah, it would be a luxury. And again, the chaos theory proponent in me says, do it. Why the hell not? Let's go. Let's go for broke. Let's see what happens here. But the more measured approach says, okay, do we really need to sign James Rodriguez? I mean, do we really need that to happen right now?
I mean, I just don't think this team is ready to go all in like that.
Right, when you still haven't found, you know, your fourth center back or any fullbacks, do you really need to go out and sign James?
Right, and I mean, we're seeing the prices that fullbacks are going for in this current market, so I think that money could be better spent elsewhere, and for center backs, for that matter.
Yeah, so I shed a small tear and then remember that Atleti are likely going to sign Mario Hermoso, and I smile again.
Yes, and this squad is very small and needs more players.
Yeah, we can't be going totally top heavy here.
Yes, we need bodies.
Yeah, I mentioned Hermoso. There's been some talk that Atleti are willing to shell out the 40 million euro release clause just to basically give the middle finger to Espanyol. There was also some talk in the papers that Atleti are just going to wait till next year and sign him for free, which would be cool, but Atleti need him now. So we'll see. Either way, it looks like Atleti are going to sign Hermoso at some point. This will likely drag on for a little while still, and he might play for Espanyol in the Europa League before it gets done. Who knows?
He'll come in, I think. I don't think Espanyol can afford to hold out and lose him for free.
It might take another month, but I think Hermoso comes in. You still have to sign fullbacks, and you still have to figure out who's leaving. Could be Vitolo going. I think the most likely to go at this point is Kalinic. Then, like, right behind him, you have Vitolo. Then Correa. I mean, we already know who's leaving or who's very close to leaving. In that category is Felipe Luis, in addition to Godin, Juanfran, etc. Griezmann.
The guys that are basically confirmed is gone. Right. Confirmed, but not confirmed.
Yeah, but Kalinic, Vitolo, Correa, those guys haven't been confirmed yet, but there is a chance that one, if not two, of all three of them are gone by the time
I think it's one or the other with Kalinic and Correa, I feel like, because there needs to be a fourth striker, basically.
Yeah.
So it just depends on your preference there. I mean, to be totally honest, I wouldn't be mad if Kalinic stuck around for another year. As a fourth striker who didn't play that much, that's okay.
Kalinic didn't play enough to bother me, so yeah, I'd be fine with him staying another year.
Yeah. I mean, emergency replacement for Morata, sure.
He didn't even get 1,000 minutes last year. How can I be mad at him?
Exactly.
He didn't play
enough. He's alright. He's fine.
Correa played enough so I could get mad at him.
Well, Correa might actually be worth something despite his horrendous last season.
Yeah,
he would certainly be worth more than Kalinic.
Yes, he would. And Kalinic, there's like a chance Kalinic could leave on loan, possibly, and Correa would not leave on loan. That'd be a permanent deal, and you'd get decent money for him.
Yeah, some team will pony up for Correa, but Kalinic, I mean, they'd be lucky to get what, 5 million, 7 million euros for him.
Probably wouldn't get more than 10.
Certainly not.
Probably not. So, yeah, plenty still to come as we approach the first week of July, end of June here, early July. Still plenty to be decided upon, plenty to announce. We'll keep plugging away, doing the podcast until we can't do them no more. Right, Rob?
Yeah, we keep on rolling, baby.
This train keeps rolling. One more thing before we sign off. One, Fernando Torres announced his retirement. Rob decided to end his, I wouldn't say ill-fated, but not entirely successful stint in Japan, his little adventure in Japan. He announced his retirement earlier this week and gave a hint that he's coming back to Atletico in the near future in some kind of administrative role. We'll see what kind of role that is, but you're going to see a lot of the former Simeone's former players transitioning into roles like this. Torres coming back to the club in some capacity. Gabby's going to come back someday. Thiago might come back someday. Juanfran might come back someday. Godin's going to keep playing for now.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of see Torres' future in more of a executive sort of role, rather than a coach kind of role. That seems sort of more tailor-made to Thiago and Gabby. I mean, it's basically an open secret, given that all of the Atleti players, specifically Koke and Saul, were like, come on home, welcome home, baby. Like, you're done, so we know you're coming back already. I mean, it's kind of an open secret that Torres wants to come back and most likely will in some capacity for next season and going forward. But, yeah, I mean, it's one of the more interesting careers of this millennium. I mean, he started at the beginning of the millennium, and there were plenty of ups and plenty of downs for Torres. Thankfully, most of the ups were at the Atleti, and the downs were elsewhere. So we'll take that.
Chelsea.
Yeah, exactly. Mostly with Chelsea, and after the first season at Liverpool. So
yeah, he has a really Torres's career is really difficult to analyze. Because he comes in, debuts with Atleti as a teenager, becomes captain at 19, scores a bunch of goals, goes to Liverpool after being linked with an exit for years, becomes a world-class striker at Liverpool, wins the Euros, wins the World Cup, and then he goes to Chelsea, he injures his knee, then he goes to Chelsea, and it's just, for the most of his time there, it's just not a good time. It's a disaster.
He wins the Champions League.
Did win the Champions League, scored at Camp Nou, and a goal that, it's funny, Chelsea didn't actually need that goal. They would have advanced anyway, but it added some nice sheen.
And it was highlight moment.
It was a great moment, for sure. Goes to Milan for half a year, and he was dreadful. Then he comes back to Atleti, and Simeone resuscitates him somewhat. And he is kind of up and down in his last seasons at Atleti, but he went out a winner in the Europa League. So, very difficult career to analyze. You wonder what it would have been if not for the injuries, if not for the wavering confidence, especially when he was at Chelsea. You wonder what more he could have done.
I mean, basically, the Premier League brutalized his body.
Yeah.
And injured him beyond belief. I mean, even his last season at Liverpool was not very good. Granted, he left in January, but... yeah, it's an interesting career. I think he could have done a lot more. Granted, he won literally everything in football, so it's hard to say he could have done more. But in terms of his career statistics, it's not, like, unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly. He has won everything. I mean, he won the Euros.
Literally everything.
Yeah, I mean, he won the Euros twice. He won the World Cup. He won an FA Cup. He won the Champions League. He won the Europa League twice. He could have won two Champions Leagues if not for, you know, what happened in San Siro, which we don't need to discuss. He has won, and, you know, lest we forget, the Confederations Cup, that masterclass against Tahiti.
Oh, God. Oh, God, help us.
Masterclass. But,
what, he finished also runner-up in the Club World Cup with Chelsea? That was great.
Yeah, yep.
But, yeah, no, he won the Segunda. I mean, the most important trophy of all.
He won the Segunda in 2002.
But, yeah, I mean, an interesting career. Not the most prolific striker of all time, but certainly someone that contributed a lot to the teams that he was on for the most part.
Yeah, and he won trophies. In terms of his career statistics, you kind of said it perfectly. You wonder what more he could have done in terms of his personal statistics, his goals, his what have you, but he won everywhere he went. He won trophies everywhere he went, both for his domestic teams and his international team.
That's right, and was a part of the best Spanish generation of players ever. So, I mean, I'm sure he doesn't think of it as underwhelming.
No.
Considering that he won the World Cup in 2 Euros, so I think he'll take that.
It's a difficult to assess career, but also a successful one, and we'll see what the future holds for him. He's 35 now, and he'll take some time to decide what his next move is going to be, and I'm sure he comes back to Atleti very soon.
Almost certainly. Yeah. Almost certainly. I mean, the Japan thing, I think, was more for a paycheck than anything else. I think we knew that at the time. But, right. Might as well.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this edition of Colt Schnero Chat. I'd like to thank my guest, Rob Walker, for joining me on this edition of the show. Thanks, Rob.
Always a pleasure.
You can follow Rob on Twitter at rwalk03. You can follow me on Twitter at jbbaron. You can follow Into the Calderon at Into the Calderon, and like ITC on Facebook at facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. Subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of this program, Colt Schnero Chat, on your favorite podcasting platform that includes Apple Podcasts. And check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/ColtSchneroChat. You can become a Colt Schnero Chat amigo from as little as $3 a month. Get access to bonus pods, get a guaranteed answer to any question you may have on the air. patreon.com/ColtSchneroChat. We'll be back next week. Until then, adios.